The Guardian.
Hello, sport, and welcome to the final edition of Andy Zaltzman's Summer of Sport, the everything apart from football sports podcast that has single-handedly produced the best performance by Great Britain at any Olympics in the entire history of the universe. Give or take, it wasn't lottery funding, it wasn't athletes trying really hard and being really good, it wasn't even the alluring prospect of a knighthood or damehood, which is, after all, what sport is all about. It was this podcast that did it, I reckon. So, here we are. I hate to say this, people, but it is now 3 years and 11 months until the next Olympics. It's going to be tough for us all, I'm not going to deny it, but we will find a way through it, non-football sports fans, because even non-football sports never sleeps, partly because football makes so much noise. But to start helping us through the next 204 harrowingly Summer Olympic free weeks, we have, to get us going, the US Open Tennis, starting now! This very second in New York, if you're listening to this at the correct time on the 29th of August. We have the Paralympics starting in Rio on the 7th of September. And if you're listening to this in Brazil, could you please let someone know so they can maybe, you know, unlock the sports halls and stuff? It seems to slightly escape their attention. There is on Saturday the Rugby League Challenge Cup final, Hull FC versus Warrington Wolves. Let's hope that does not spark an East versus West conflict between the rival vertical halves of Britain. There's enough discord in this land as it is. We have one day in international cricket. England already 1-0 up against Pakistan as our record, continuing their clever strategy of belatedly embracing the concept of progress after two decades of World Cup failures, dropping fairly industrially sized hints that we might have been barking up the wrong, overcautious tree. We have Formula One. It could be a really exciting end to the season. Yeah. In fact, the FIA have just announced that in order to fit more races in next year, the 2017 season will begin at this weekend's 2016 Belgian Grand Prix. Drivers will drive two cars simultaneously with points counting for this and next year's championships. The 75-race 2017 season will include races in Somalia and North Korea. Those are rewards for being first, joint first, in this year's global corruption ratings. There'll also be a race around the Roulette Arena at Michele Stantaneo's mega casino in Las Vegas, and a Grand Prix in the personal vegetable garden of the multi-trillionaire oil and vinegar tycoon Sheikh Kalaba Al Kalabadal. Onwards and upwards for Formula One.
Andy Zaltzman, Summer of Sport.
Let's turn to the Paralympics now. Rio might have put on a decent Olympics and made sure that all the spectators had enough space to stretch out for a snooze during the boring bits, but the Paralympics is looking like it might have a few troubles. I spoke to the government minister for events, Administracinho. He, of course, took over when the previous minister and her assistant, that's Betty and Logisticao, were sacked for being corrupt, but not quite corrupt enough not to be sackable. So I flew to Rio and spoke to the new minister. Minister, thank you very much for taking some time out from what I know must be a very hectic schedule to talk to Andy Zaltzman's Summer of Sport.
No problem, Andy. I am a huge fan of the show, as indeed are all people in South America.
Cheers. So, talk us through the Paralympics.
What do you mean? I know Rio 2016 was not as good as London, but to describe it as a Paralympics is a bit harsh. I thought it was slightly above par.
That's not quite what I meant, Minister, and in any case, that is arguable.
Hey, you are from the Independent Republic of Team GB. Shut up and wear your metal.
Sorry, Minister, my mistake. Anyway, I was talking about the Paralympics, which is a different event. You know, it's the festival of parasports that has inspired the planet with the triumph of human endeavour over adversity and misfortune.
I am sorry, I have never heard of it. When and where is it happening?
Well, it starts in just over a week here in Brazil. You're supposed to be organising it.
Oh, shit. Does it need stadiums and stuff like that?
Yes, you can generally use the ones you had for the Olympics.
Oh, we've already shut some of them down.
And you might want to try selling some tickets and stuff?
Really? Oh.
Yeah, it was absolutely massive in London 4 years ago. It was a huge success.
Oh. Oh, balls. I better go. I've got stuff to do.
Minister, thank you for talking to us.
Can I just say hello to my wife, Betty, and everyone who knows me?
Not that kind of show.
Strap in, it's Andy Zaltzman, Summer of Sport.
For an American perspective on the closing stages of the Olympics, and indeed all other things to do with any sport apart from football, it is Hari Kondabolu joining us once again from New York. Hello.
Hello, Andy. It's good to hear from you.
Thanks. Now, our two great, great nations, the United Kingdom and the United States, I think both of us now have inverted commas, ironically, around the word United of our nations. We finished first and second in the Olympic medals table. Now, technically, the USA won more medals than the UK, but we like to think of ourselves as top. And we've been getting very excited that we beat China and all other countries here. I mean, has the Olympics been a big thing in America's sporting consciousness?
Yeah, it seems to take over the television, and for a magical few weeks, water polo is relevant, and dressage, and archery. Archery is something one would do perhaps, in the Middle Ages and at camp. In America, an American camp life. So,
well, I mean, I think that's basically why you brought in the Second Amendment, wasn't it? To stop archery and try to move it on.
Yeah, that is correct. I didn't know you were a historian of...
Of course.
...of American... early days of America. I mean, it takes over. Certainly the Ryan Lochte story got a lot of attention.
Well, rightly so. That's one of the great stories. I mean, to put it briefly, he claimed that he'd been held at gunpoint in fear of his life, and essentially what had happened was not that. What had happened, he got a bit pissed and had a piss and smashed up a toilet. Is that an accurate summary of it?
Yeah, that's an accurate summary of his inaccurate summary, yes.
Right, okay, good.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing because he basically pinned it on Brazil. It seemed like an easy thing. Oh, of course, Brazil, crime. Of course this happened to me. And everyone bought it, and then it found out, no, it had nothing to do with Brazil. You're an idiot. And then you blame Brazilians for something they did not do. And it's funny because people have been saying, oh, what a terrible way to represent the country. You're abroad representing America. It is an accurate way to represent America. That is exactly how it works. We go in there, we do whatever we want, and we leave and we blame other people. That is an accurate representation. So finally, I'm glad an Olympian did their job of representing this country properly.
That's a nice way of putting it. Yeah. And I mean, is this evidence of the Donald Trump influence on Americans, just prepared to tell absolutely outright lies without really worrying that facts may ever intrude?
No, I don't want to take... I don't want to take Ryan Lochte's assholery away from him.
Right, okay.
I don't want to say this is the influence. I think it's his own brand of assholery or douchebaggery, depending on what part of the country you're in.
potato, potato.
Exactly. I think that he would have done this regardless of what was happening in American politics. I have a sense that this man is oblivious of everything around him, and the only thing he seems to do well is swimming in a pool.
Right, which is, I mean, a relatively useful skill if and only if you are an Olympic swimmer.
Right.
Other big American star of the Games was the gymnast Simone Biles.
Yes.
I mean, I know, Hari, you're an incorrigible fan of gymnastics.
Yes.
And think of little else in your every waking hour. Did you manage to catch any of her extraordinary performances?
It's stunning. Like with the hanging on the bars.
That's the technical
term. The uneven bars.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you got to flip around and stuff. That's exciting, but it's like a very specific kind of thing. And then there's the one where you vault. I think it's called the vault.
The vault. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good knowledge.
You got to run and jump on a thing and. You know, I mean, all these things, there's kind of something in place. But I saw her performance on the floor, She has nothing but herself. There's nothing to hold on to, nothing to jump on. It's just her doing incredible things with just her body and gravity. So I found that fascinating. She was wonderful. Also, Gabby Douglas did not win, but again made news because she didn't put her hand on her heart during the national anthem. And so everyone gave her a lot of crap for that. She wasn't particularly American, even though 4 years ago she won a gold medal. And also Ryan Lochte destroyed some bill and blamed the local population for threatening with a gun that did not exist.
Right, but did he do that whilst with his hand on his heart and singing the Star Spangled Banner?
The whole time. So fair.
So that makes it better than Gabby Douglas. But
yeah. Right. Who was just standing there not committing crimes in another country, but without her hand on her heart.
And that's unforgivable, isn't it?
Yes.
Surely, in this day and age.
Brought up for it probably is done now because the Olympics are over, so it probably won't ever get brought up. But for those 2 or 3 weeks, it was brought up.
Why is it that the hand on the heart is I mean, is this a health thing? Is it just a check that your heart is still beating, that you haven't died of an excess of pride? I mean, would
first
fingers
of all,
on...
Andy, if you know anything about America, heart health is not really a priority. But it's I have no idea why that is the case. I don't know why. Like, if for example, if I put it on my stomach, would people say?
That's surely more of an American way to do it, as you said.
I would say, like, this is a bit more valuable to an American. I don't know why. It's a symbolic gesture, and apparently we like symbolism, even if we don't understand what it means.
Right.
An eagle. A lot of people don't know the stars and stripes, how many there actually are, but we're about the stars and stripes. The government, that is symbolic of a government. It's obviously run by 5 or 6 people in an underground bunker. We have the symbol, the appearance of a government. We're all about symbolism in America.
Let's move on from the Olympics. I know you're a Mets fan, aren't you?
Yes.
In baseball. I mean, what has struck me this season is the Chicago Cubs, who have not won the World Series since 1908, and are currently by far the best team in baseball. What on earth is going on?
Well, they have a history of breaking, the hearts of Cubs fans with remarkable ways to collapse and lose and not make the World Series. So I guess they've decided to really destroy their fan base this year by being as good as they possibly can for a 162-game regular season before doing something horrendous in the playoffs. So this is like when I see them win, I just think it's very cruel of them to win this many games. Because if they snuck into the playoffs, it at least feels like, okay, you just got in, and if you lose, that might happen. They really want people to think they're going to win this year before blowing it all.
Right. I mean, because you would have thought, I mean, not long ago, that the prospects of the Cubs ever winning the World Series was very, very remote.
Mm-hmm.
But then you would have thought that the prospect of Donald Trump being a genuine contender for the White House would be even more remote than that. So, I mean, are we just basically entering the end times?
I think baseball's a little less corrupt than politics.
Right.
I mean,
wow.
I mean, that's... the steroids business and all.
What an accolade.
That's the one thing. I mean, yeah, he does prove the impossible is possible.
So he's an inspiration to all aspiring sport. Donald Trump is the inspiration. What you're saying, Harry, is Donald Trump is the inspiration to all sportsmen around the world now.
Andy, that is exactly what I'm saying.
Right. That sounded like what you were saying.
You got it to a T, sir. You read between those lines and you found the truth. Donald Trump is a game changer, no pun intended.
But from the New York perspective, the Mets third in the NL East, I notice. The Yankees fourth in the AL East.
Yes.
So, I mean, is that making you walk with an extra spring in your step at the moment?
No, not really. I mean, it's like comparing the gross national products of like Uzbekistan and Dagestan. It's not, I don't know what their gross national product is, but I'm assuming it's not amongst the top 10.
Right, we are just losing thousands of listeners amongst our Uzbek fans.
Eastern European base. Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like it's not a great baseball season so far. The Mets had a incredible team going in, bunch of young stars, young pitchers, and in Mets fashion, they all got injured. And the Yankees had a bunch of overpriced older stars who got injured. Alex Rodriguez retired, thank goodness. And the current...
I thought he'd retired about 7 or 8 years ago and just carried on playing.
Oh, no. They have been paying him way too much.
But he had in essence, he'd mentally retired but was still physically playing. Was that the situation he was in?
Yeah, I think
a new form of retirement.
I think we all checked out, to be perfectly honest. I think the fans checked out, managers checked out, he checked out, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, he's retiring, and it's like, oh, he's still playing, he's on the field right now. The end of his career was so disgraceful, and I'm glad that's over. I mean, the news right now in New York is these young prospects they've brought up to fill the places of the players that have left or retired, gotten too old. They're playing fantastic, especially a fellow named Gabby Sanchez, who's now hit 9 home runs in the first 21 games of his career, which is very good.
So, exciting times in baseball land. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Hari, and I'll be talking to you soon on the revamped, relaunched Bugle podcast. For any Bugle listeners listening to this, Hari will be one of the guest co-hosts. We'll be relaunching in September. Anyway, for now, Hari, thanks very much for joining me on Summer of Sport.
Thank you, Andy. I appreciate it.
Water sports.
Just some more news just breaking, in fact. Another American swimmer in trouble at the center of a media storm after backtracking on previous claims. The 312-meter butterfly specialist, LeDerek Screech, had told the press that on the final night of the games, he was visited by Jesus, Moses, and another prominent prophet who gave Screech a message to tell the world, a message that everyone should just learn to get along, that sandwiches are sinful, and that the recently discovered Earth-sized planet at Proxima Centauri is ready to go if we don't all buck our ideas up. But after police in Brazil cast doubts on his story, Screech has now revised his claims. Turns out he just burped and took a piss in a hedge.
Foul joke and a miss. Andy Zaltzman 1, Sport 4.
The latest now in our series of exclusive in-action commentary recorded by Olympic stars during their events on the special Guardian exclusive headsets. This week, exclusive to the Guardian, it's BMX, which saw thousands of Colombians going absolutely nuts for a grown woman riding a kid's bike really fast. And I, for one, am happy to live on a planet where that kind of thing happens, so thank you, Mariana Pajon, for making that possible. Our footage, however, comes from the men's event, and riding for Team USA in the third Prepacharge race was Vandross McClotch.
Let's go! Whee-hee! Let's do a wacko-wheelie thing. Oh, yeah! Clunk! Oops, sorry, bumped him off. Look at my little legs. This is fun. Sorry, this is elite sport. This is definitely elite sport. Never forget that focus. My bike is tiny, but I like it. Whee! Oh, it's finished. I want another go. What do you mean I haven't qualified? I didn't even know it was a race.
That was Vandross McClotch, aged 49.
Rugby!
The record has been broken for the world's largest scrum. What, to get tickets for my last few shows at the Edinburgh Fringe? No, that was more of a ruck, technically. No, the official record was set in Cardiff and featured 1,297 players. That's an odd number, surely an unfair advantage for the side that packed down with 649 against 648. However, doubts have been cast over whether or not the record should stand after one of the props, 72 in from the Loosehead side on the red team, put his arm very slightly in the wrong place on someone else's arm. Clear penalty to me. And that was after the scrum had already collapsed and been reset 520 times under the weight of almost 1,300 people simultaneously cheating, or in rugby parlance, playing the ref. Elsewhere in rugby, the world champions New Zealand battered last year's losing finalists Australia like an extremely naughty haddock. It was 32-3 at half-time after one of the most perfect 40-minute exhibitions of all blackery in New Zealand's illustrious rugby history. They eased off a bit to win 42-8 in the end. And this, of course, Is New Zealand at the start of a rebuilding phase after the retirement of a huge swathe of core players? On this form, it is hard to see how they will ever lose again without someone persuading the French to resume their Pacific nuclear testing program and hacking into Google Maps to rename New Zealand as Mururoa Atoll.
Coming to you live from the Sporter Cabin.
But the lingering sports question emerging from this summer's Summer of Sports is, why is Britain so good at the Olympics? Second in the medal table, behind only the USA, who basically don't count because they take it too seriously. We beat Antarctica, which has 57 times the landmass that we have, and got zero medals whatsoever, the penguin-obsessed losers. Now, the rest of the world is not entirely happy, suggesting that maybe we throw too much money at the problem. But it's not about that. You want to know how the British do it, world? It's simple. They do it by being British. It is our innate, natural Britishness that powers us to the finish line and out from under the pommel horse ahead of all other nations. It is nothing to do with national lottery funding, you cynics. It is nothing to do even with the talent and dedication of athletes perfecting their skills and physiques. It is just our phenomenally British Britishness catapulting us to the top. These tiny, tiny islands, barely big enough to fit even a humble table tennis table, where the very struggle for existence is a daily battle in itself, where only the ability to row in straight lines for 2 kilometres as fast as possible, or cycle really slowly for a bit, then really fast around a special track, or make a horse boogie very neatly indeed, keeps us away from the sharks and the man-eating reptiles and stuff like that. These humble isles, barely known outside the confines of this planet, through their magic Britishness, have Britishly conquered the sporting world. So I hope that's cleared up any confusion. Well, that brings us kicking and screaming reluctantly to the end of this Summer of Sports Season 1 of potentially 5 billion or so more Summers of Sports before the inevitable heat death of the universe. I hope you've enjoyed listening. I have certainly enjoyed having to watch as much sport as humanly possible in my ceaseless journalistic quest to provide you with the deepest and most meaningful insights into the athletic. That's obviously bullshit. I'd have watched it all anyway. Personal highlights, well, a magnificent test series between England and Pakistan, in which the homeless Pakistan cricket team, with their ageing warrior batsmen, hopeless fielding and intermittently scintillating bowlers, managed to achieve top spot in the world rankings, a truly formidable achievement. Then there was Andy Murray showing that he still knows one end of a tennis racket from the other, especially when he has Ivan Lendl sitting by the court pulling his best "don't get stroppy, young man" face. There's been the majesty of the All Blacks taking rugby union into new dimensions. Usain Bolt, who I believe has probably sprinted his way onto the all-time top three sporting legends podium. Water polo, just because I saw a bit of it online and it's awesome. Half sport, half dramatisation of the tough early stages of life evoluting in the merciless oceans. And I wish we gave a shit about it in this sporting country, but sod it, it's only one gold per gender, and other countries are already good at it. Britain doing well in gymnastics, which our entire national diet and way of life is specifically designed to avoid. And above all, the Olympics in general, because they keep real news off the telly for 2.5 glorious weeks every 4 years, and that has to be in everyone's interests. Thanks for listening, and may sports have mercy on your soul. Bye.